Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about elements that impact our lives. This is a quick podcast as I'm going for a quick errand. I thought I'd just talk about this basically off the top of my head. So going down the periodic table, you go through it. I've heard a number of podcasts ad nauseum as I looked at different aspects of the periodic table, different groups, different stories of it. I suppose the most dramatic is the fact that we got two of our periodic table elements courtesy of American atomic bombs spreading their beautiful radioisotopes over us, and people were able to look at it and say, oh, or they were able to look at it and say, oh, look, we've discovered fermium and einsteinium. But they're not the elements I want to talk about. I want to talk about things that you might think, and it's sort of elements very close to us. The first one I want to talk about is lithium. And they discovered that lithium deficiencies or lithium treatment can actually help people with bipolar disorder, the manic depressive people, people who are at one point extremely sad and then over-exuberantly happy. A majority of people associate this with, social disorders, crimes and stuff like this. But, you know, it's a fairly significant medical condition. And it's one of the things that I've heard in the, the 80s and 90s, but it's sort of disappeared from view. This is that you take the lithium tablets. So lithium is the third element, hydrogen, helium, lithium, that you get there. And there used to be curative waters that the Romans had, which were strong lithium. So I think it's for me, it's one of those things which, because I haven't heard about it, I think it's really the on the herbal side, the soft side of things. What I want to do is then moving along to, I just want to think whether bromine's after it, so I'll do iron. The next one is iron. We all need iron. Iron's the critical stuff. It's the chelated metal held in a jewellery setting in our blood and hemoglobin. So it's important for the absorption of oxygen in our blood. So when the carbon dioxide goes out of our blood, the pH drops, and so the hemoglobin takes on oxygen. And when it goes to parts of our body which is producing a lot of carbon dioxide, the pH increases. There's more hydrogen ions around the place due to the dissolved carbon dioxide, and then it releases oxygen. So this is a very important process. And it is using iron as the the conductor of these other molecules, which allow the ferrying of oxygen. Sort of like, it's not fanning the flame, it brings oxygen to the flame. So when there's smoke, the body goes around and produces, if you consider carbon dioxide smoke, where there's smoke it dumps a lot of oxygen, and when there's not a lot of smoke, it absorbs the oxygen. So that's a process. But iron, it's important. It's sort of interesting. Normally we have iron in foods, or we go to great extents to, eat meats and things like that. But what people actually do to fortify your breakfast cereal, after Ceres, the goddess of the harvest cereal, is that actual people get some iron and just put it in your food, similar to the way that you actually put in pepper as a condiment. Sort of like you have salt, which is sodium chloride. They actually have little iron filings, and so What you can do is, if you've got your cornflakes, crush them up and separate the iron out with a magnet. So this is one thing you can do. You can actually collect quite a reasonable quantity, at least in Australia. There's that. There's also in the salt in Australia, because there's a lack of iodine in our soils, the salt is reinforced with iodized. It's called iodized salt. So iron is the sixth element across in the transition elements, and I'm just going to have a quick go now to see if I can actually list the elements up to iron at least. So that's hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, boron, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine, neon, sodium, magnesium, aluminium, silicon, phosphorus, sulfur, chlorine, argon, potassium, calcium, scandium, titanium, vanadium, chromium, manganese, and iron. That's how you get to iron. So I'm just slowly improving my understanding to get this across. So that's iron. It's got this use that you get. The next element I want to talk about really quickly is bromine. And I don't think we use bromine that much in our bodies. I'm sure it's got some sort of biological use. I suppose you can have bromine deficiency. But what really got me is that we're fed bromine in bromine brominated vegetable oils, BVOs, and the drink of choice, which exploits the BVO, is Mountain Dew. But I think it might be also in Fanta. It will be anything which has got a citrus juice, where you just you want the citrus oil to be suspended equally and transported. They substitute the bubble bromine gas through it and make the water heavier, because bromine's sufficiently heavy. So bromine's in group 17 underneath, going down the halogens. So it goes, fluorine, chlorine, bromine, iodine, astatine. I have to remember if that's actually correct. I think that's covered all those. So that's bromine. Now, the what I want to finally talk about is antinomy, which is Sb, and it's in the nitrogens, the p nitrogens, and it's the one heavier than arsenic. So arsenic is what actually sidles up to bromine, so it's in that next level. And I'll just talk about this. I've just got to stop here momently and pop in here. Thanks a lot. Hello, I'm back again. I'm sure this will be no period of time whatsoever, but I've just completed a small errand, and I'm doing this as podcast as you go. So we're looking at elements of the periodic table. There was the group 1 lithium, moved across to, iron, which is group 8. This is in the new money. This is the the actual Arabic numeral rather than Roman numeral ones. And I've actually proposed a group to get through the lanthanides, calling them a group 2.1 to get view for lanthanum, and forward after that. I really can't remember them as much as I would. So we did iron, we've done bromine, and now we're doing antinomy, which is that one underneath arsenic, Sb next to tin, Sn. Tin's in the carbon group. What's the one after that? It's tellurium, is the oxygen either side. It's struck over there. It's not a
and you know a lot about, but it's been known since ancient times, used by the Egyptians as variously as a medicine, even though it's mostly poisonous, and it's also used for the eye colouring. C-O-L-H, coal. This is the, you know, those beautiful Egyptian women, Cleopatra and all that type of stuff, with a very heavy eyeshadow. For some reason, they used that there. Must be very, very good for them. I also have heard from someone, but I'm not sure if this is true, that they'd eat it, and because it wouldn't be absorbed by the body, they'd have to actually go through their feces and actually pick it out again to reuse it several times. So that's an interesting thing of Antony, and of course the name of Antony is anti-monk, because the monks used it as a dye, and they used to die from using the dye, so to speak. But Antony has got a use as a flame retardant, and of course flame retardants really interest me, because in general the story that they teach kids about fire, the fire triangle, which is fuel, oxygen and heat, doesn't really go to the heart of the fact that flames need chemically reactive free radicals in which to enter. So you can see this, the actual flame that you see, the glowing part of the flame, it needs, that needs to be there such that volatile fuel entering into those radicals react with the radicals and continue the production of more radicals. So flame, in actual fact, is an area of gas with active radicals in it. And you can sort of see that you don't necessarily need a lot of heat for a fire. So you can actually get some, you can burn some alcohol on your hand. There's very little heat produced, a lot of light, and it's when the alcohol vapor goes out and actually interacts with the zone of free radicals that goes ahead. So antinomy as a flame retardant mops up the free radicals and actually just kills the flame dead. It actually removes those free radicals and actually fights the flame. Now how it does it, looking up the site, is that antinomy oxide and some chlorates, you have to mix it together, and so when this heats up, the oxides, antinomy oxide goes into the flame, as long as also the chlorates. An actual flame processes the antinomy into a volatile form of antinomy, in terms of antinomy chlorides and fluorides and bromides, the halogen stuff, and this is something which quenches the radicals. So it's sort of a bit like the CFCs in the ozone layer, quenching the ozone layer. This actually quenches the fire layer. So rather than creating a hole in the ozone layer, it creates a hole in your fire laser, your layer, and stops it dead. So it's getting rid of those free radicals, which is the important thing that goes there. So, you know, the beautiful, I suppose, blue colour of your flame when you light up, that blueness. So there's no, suddenly it's cold gas and then it's inside, it's hot gas. No, it's, there's no radicals, and suddenly inside that flame front there's radicals. Now that's why there's a boundary. There's not a sudden heat boundary. It's not cool and then very hot. No, it's no radicals, and then suddenly there is radicals. And why are there suddenly radicals? Well, the radicals are made by radicals interacting with fuel and oxygen, the actual burning process. They're made there. So that's how the antinomy acts as a flame retardant. And it also acts to reduce the burning of carbon to make it less volatile. So it creates a char encasement of it. And so the obvious thing to do is people get burnt in their bed. If you could make mattresses made out of flame retardant things, people wouldn't be burnt alive in their bed. Perhaps if you could also make sheets and curtains out of this type of stuff. Now, a quick check of the internet around the turn of the century, the turn of the millennia, around the early 2000s, perhaps later, there seems to be this resurrection of this concern that we are all sleeping on beds of antinomy. That's most mattresses have to reach flame specifications to be legal to be sold. And there's been this thought that the infant's mattresses are leaching antinomy and causing sudden infant death, which is one of those bizarre things that someone says, and it's a typical scientific facts being sufficiently hidden to people. The main concern is not telling them not to be concerned because there's no reason to be concerned. So you can imagine this sort of logical step. You actually don't tell people that they're sleeping on a mattress full of antinomy. And the antinomy, as we have spoken, operates in two ways. One is being dragged into the flame and reacting with the flame and forming flame quenches the radicals of the flame, actually stops the flame, and then also reacting at the point of burning such that it entombs the flame, really stops them. And so this is the idea that you're sleeping on an antinomy. Now, apparently you eat a fair amount of antinomy in the environment naturally. There's a natural amount of antinomy in there anyway, but whether this leaching actually gets into your system is I suppose food for thought. So it's a very interesting aspect. So one of the things I would be interested in is that if in a fire you should basically protect yourself with mattresses. If mattresses are fire retardant and they can't get through, I just wonder whether a fire blanket also has antinomy in it, such that it when you heat it up, it actually squirts out fire retardant. Now, of course, you want to go in and see how do bedding companies market it, because beds are incredibly expensive. So just to put yourself in an idea that people can often be convinced to pay more for a bed, just bombarded with facts, than they pay for a second-hand car, $5,000 for a bed or whatever. They do make things. So I thought I'd have a quick look on the internet and have a look at how they handle the antinomy problem, because there's really no other element in the periodic table which does a good job as stopping them. And the only website which really promoted it was people selling prison beds. They're saying this has definitely got antinomy. Now, obviously, the prisoners don't have a big selection. They say, oh, I'm not sleeping in that cell, it's got an antinomy bed now. But you can sort of realise what happens is that the riot comes along and they get all the mattresses and go to light them, and nothing happens. So it's something, it's almost thinking ahead that people don't think, oh, the poor person might be burnt into their bed. They're more concerned about antinomy against against firefighting. But that being said, it does beg the question of these sacrificial mattresses you could put out, but not necessarily mattresses, but protections over assets. When a flame front comes across, you could do it. It seems an area for very, very good research to see how you can do it. Now, of course, I think there would be a whole lot of other fire retardants. And I think we're in Australia, have got all the defence forces use different fire retardants, and they've got into the water table, and there's people trying to work out. So what I will do is do a molecular tour of some of these fire retardants people are concerned about and have a real good look into it. Thanks a lot for listening. I'll have to get back home now. Thanks. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.